Hi, it's Amy Siskin of The Weekly List and author of the book, The List, and welcome to episode 140 of The Weekly List Podcast, which is the sixth episode in a segment called Democracy at Risk. Welcome. So first, an important announcement as relates to this project, including The Weekly List. Lists, as well as this podcast you are listening to. I have officially gifted the entire collection to the University of Pennsylvania in their Annenberg School, and it will be maintained for posterity and freely available to the public. Again, all of the lists, the podcasts, all the associated materials and articles and magazine, and other memorabilia that you folks handed me as I did book events around the country, and all the resistance garb and all the rest will be safely housed at University of Pennsylvania. So I'm very pleased about that. It is the first project of its kind where, because of the links to all the news sources and the conceivable notion that a century from now, we will not have something called the internet. It's going to be saved in such a way that 100 years from now, when whatever systems they're using to look at old things from our time, it will still be viewable and available, including all the sources for every article and all the data and these recordings and all the rest. So I'm very excited about that. Also, if you are listening to this and would like to write a short note that will be included in the collection about how the list in this project impacted you during the 4 years of Trump, you can write a short letter or statement and send it as an email to The Weekly List Archive, all one word, theweeklylistarchive@gmail.com. And it will be printed out and you will be part of history as well as part of this collection at University of Pennsylvania. So tonight we're going to do something a little bit different. First, I want to talk about the 2021 election. I was waiting to do the next podcast until after the election. I had a feeling I knew how it was going to go, and unfortunately it did go that way. The news was not all bad on election night, despite the media painting it that way. For example, in Georgia, we picked up 41 state seats. We did really well in Westchester County, where I live. So it was really a tale of two cities, so to speak. Places where we are set up and well organized seem to hold out okay. Other areas on a statewide basis, we lost Virginia, which was sort of a bellwether for the mood of the country. It's a state that Biden had won by 10 points. It is an off-year election, and it is also, you know, typically what happens when a party is in charge. They tend to lose seats. So there is that, but there's also worrying signs. If you ask 10 different people what happened in Virginia and with some of the things that we did lose, you'll get 10 different answers. But the things that I have observed as an activist who's very much in the trenches and was involved as well in Virginia with trying to help them with messaging and social media, what I noticed is a level of apathy. And it's where I live, but it's countrywide. You know, we fought so hard for the 4 years of the Trump era to take back the House first. And then that was in 2018. We organized, we started up indivisible groups and resistance groups. We worked really hard. We worked really hard again in 2020. To take back the Senate and the White House. Those things were not easily done. Those were years of focus and they were exhausting. Add to that a once in a century pandemic that started at the end of the Trump era and continued as we speak continues. I've heard the phrase by a health professional in recent weeks that there will be generational trauma as well from this pandemic. So add that onto all the stuff that we've been talking about related to broken norms and lawlessness and all the rest in this podcast. It's been a tough go. I get it. Everyone is exhausted. And there's a feeling, and I'm stating this because 100 years from now, when they listen and try to understand and make sense of what has happened, they need to understand what we were feeling at the time. The feeling that I am hearing, and my friends who are activists are hearing, kind of repeated back again and again, is we did all this work and we had nothing to show for it. In terms of up until Friday night, after the election, unfortunately, major legislation, the Biden agenda had basically stalled ahead of voting. And as well, and as important, related to accountability and consequences. Here we are 10 months after a near bloody coup of our election and the insurrection, January 6th. And there's really been no real accountability. There's some arrests, I believe are up to 400 or 500 arrests, some minor jail time, really nothing to speak of. None of the architects behind it, Trump and the rest of the gang, have had any accountability. There have been attempts to subpoena people in his circle, and some of those have refused, just like during the Trump era when he controlled the DOJ, which shouldn't be happening, but he did. We all lived through that. And he was able to use executive privilege to get away with himself not appearing before these committees and as well anyone in his regime. They're still using that excuse. And Steve Bannon, who wasn't even part of the regime, who was called, has been referred for criminal contempt against the House for refusing to show up and testify. That was weeks ago. At this point, the Department of Justice has not done anything with that referral. There's been, likewise, you know, the hearings. We had one hearing from the Select House Committee that's set up to investigate January 6th. And since then, it's kind of gone quiet. So there's this feeling of maybe learned helplessness. I thought it was really interesting. I was down in Virginia weeks before the election, visiting actually with some friends, with some sorority sisters. And I was surprised by the lack of signs, lawn signs. I said to one of my friends, we have more signs up where I live, and we just have local elections, many of which are unopposed. What she said to me is a lot of people are afraid now. We're close enough to Washington, D.C. We're afraid after what happened at the insurrection to be overtly political, which is, you know, obviously worrisome. And that's what we're going to talk about, this week. Rather than go through all the things that have come up since we spoke last, I'm going to read a piece that is shortly going to be published that I wrote just to kind of ring the alarm bells for what I see. I'm going to read it to you roughly, not the exact thing, and sort of unlike the piece that will be published online, give some context to what I'm saying and what my concern is. But the name of the article is, I sounded the alarm for authoritarianism in 2016, and I am sounding it again. So what this article talks about is, I'm going to go through it, that we are very much still at risk. And if you've been listening to this podcast, a lot of this is stuff that you have heard me say. But I'm struck by how even my friends who are political, how little awareness there is of how much we are still at risk for having a repeat of 2020 and Trump's efforts to subvert our election. And how much apathy there is still. I mean, I think there's a certain, again, exhaustion, complacency. I just want to rest. It was such a hard 4 years. The pandemic is hard. I'm still depressed. I'm still this, that, and the other thing. And I get it. Listen, it's dark now. We have to turn back the clocks. It's dark at 5. It's starting to get cold. People are bummed out. People are tired. People are feeling like all this was for naught, like all of our efforts, they're not listening to us. The Senate is out of session after losing the election for 12 days. I get all that. But what I'm about to discuss is why we have to pick ourselves up and start caring again. So again, the name of the article is I Sounded the Alarm for Authoritarianism in 2016, and I am sounding it again. On January 20th, 2021, we were finally able to exhale, believing our near brush with authoritarianism was behind us. With President Joe Biden taking office, our country and political system would return to normalcy. Now, in fact, I personally changed the format of this podcast. Remember, we were going to be retracing our steps back to normalcy. It's amazing how little of that we have done, and you know, and how much we're still at risk for normalizing what Trump did by not holding these things to account. But what we discovered in the ensuing months that we talked about in this podcast is that our brush with authoritarianism was not behind us. Elected Republicans have continually questioned the 2020 election results and attempted to rewrite history, including, as we have discussed on this podcast, casting the January 6th insurrection as a mere tourist visit. Representative Liz Cheney, that was another turning point in this podcast, who was a Trump critic, was removed from House leadership and replaced with a loyalist, Elise Stefanik. Instead of righting itself, the Republican Party has been subsumed by Trumpism. Nearly 6 in 10 Republican voters say believing the big lie that Trump won in 2020 is as an important part of their party identification. 6 in 10. All the while, Republicans have quietly and methodically taken steps to be in a position to overturn the 2024 election. The 2020 election aftermath may well be a harbinger, much like Hitler's Bearhall Putsch and the 1905 Russian Revolution, in other words, a dry run for the coup of our democracy in 2024. And Biden understands this too, folks. I mean, we've talked about it on the podcast, but he has repeatedly, you know, used the construct of him needing to prove a functioning government can deliver for the people versus becoming an authoritarian state. He said in his first joint address to Congress, quote, "We have to prove democracy still works." We're 1 year later almost, 1 year away from the election, and we're still very much in a battle for the soul of our country. And that's why the upcoming midterms are so critically important. And we all need to gear up and get engaged in saving our democracy. Because the Republicans have a playbook. And we're going to talk about what that is now. The first part is widespread voter suppression. So far this year, 17 states led by Republican legislatures have used the big lie to enact restrictive voting laws. It's a tried and true strategy of a party reliant on white Christian voters, which are a declining proportion of our population. And that strategy is to deny the right to vote to people whose skin is not white. Now, part of the reason it's so easy for them to get away with voter suppression is the Republican Party's long game of taking control of our nation's highest court. After invalidating key parts of the Voting Rights Act in 2013, in July of this year, and we discussed this in one of the podcasts, an even more conservatively stacked Supreme Court signaled their disinterest in protecting the right to vote in a 6-3 ruling, which allowed two Arizona voter suppression provisions to stand. The ruling makes it substantially harder to challenge restrictive measures, effectively leaving it to Congress to pass legislation to protect voting rights. That window, however, could close after the 2020 midterms if we are not in control of the Senate and the House. Already, these measures, voter suppression measures, accompanied by aggressive gerrymandering in some GOP-led states. Remember, we did the census. The districts are being gerrymandered, and the GOP controls the majority of states. Already, those measures and voter suppression will make the climb to keeping our majorities that much steeper. Take Georgia, for example, where Senator Raphael Warnock is up for re-election, this time facing 16 new provisions enacted by Republicans to limit voting. But losing our majorities in the midterms would disable our last safety valve at the federal level to protect against GOP efforts to subvert our democracy with voter suppression. Without federal legislation, these efforts at the state level would go unchallenged unless there is a Democratic governor. Not coincidentally, another target in the Republican playbook will be Democratic governors, therefore. Just like last week, Governor Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan vetoed restrictive voting bills put forth by the state's Republican-led legislature. It was a test flare. Republicans now are hyper-focused for 2022 on three key states, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. Ring a bell? In 2016, a mere 77,000 votes in those three states delivered Trump the presidency. The three states were also key to Biden's 2020 victory. On the ballot next year in 2022, in all three states, are the roles of governor, attorney general, and secretary of state. The safeguards not only from voter suppression laws, but also for overturning state results. Trump had a practice run with overturning the will of the voters in 2020, coming closest in the state of Michigan. He invited two Michigan state legislators to the White House, while his allies and lawyers put forward fake claims of widespread voter fraud in Wayne County, which, by the way, is part of Detroit with a large Black population. The Michigan State Board of Canvassers eventually held hearings before finally certifying results. It took weeks after the election day, and it was a cliffhanger. I remember listening to this. And folks, as you know, despite all my jokes about womp womp and champagne and all the rest, it took a long time for us to get through having this election certified. All the recounts, all the rest, you know, we talked about this in the podcast. But I have to tell you, being honest, this was the one time I was actually the most worried and scared that what happened in Michigan, where it was again, this Michigan State Board of Canvassers that had two Republicans and two Democrats. And it was a cliffhanger. In the end, the two Democrats voted to certify, one Republican joined with them, and the other Republican abstained, but it could have gone the other way. And my fear at the time was that Trump could invalidate one state's results that would set off a domino effect and could overturn the election and end our democracy. So also ahead of the 2024 election, Trump has also been priming his base with a big lie. A recent poll found just one-third of Republicans, just one-third, say they will trust the 2024 election results if Trump loses. Just a third will trust the results. Republicans also, inspired by his false accusation of widespread fraud, have been systematically threatening election officials and their families, causing an exodus of experienced workers, many of whom will now be replaced by Trump loyalists. So you can imagine a scenario when we get to 2024 of a close election. But this time, Republicans are in control of the House and Senate, as well as key state roles in the three states we just discussed, being stacked with his loyalists. So in that scenario, who would fight back? Where are the guardrails? This is the nightmare scenario that the GOP is quietly cobbling together. It would spell the end of the great American experiment in democracy. So as dire as this sounds, and it is dire, folks, it is not too late to fight back and protect our democracy. We know how to do this. We've done it before. We organized, as I said at the top of the broadcast. We had resistance groups in 2018. We took back the House. And in 2020, we took back the White House and the Senate. And I know many of us are feeling exhausted. I get it. But it's time to push the panic button and awaken into activism. The feeling of calm you have right now is but quicksand. So reach out to your members of the House and Senate. I'm going to be publishing this article in the coming days. Send it to them about our democracy at risk. And demand urgency and action on voting rights. As leader of the Senate, Mitch McConnell carved out an exception to the filibuster to confirm Trump's judges. We can and must do so in order to protect the core of our democracy, the right to vote. Folks, as you've heard me say so many times before, In the end, we are the cavalry, and no one is coming to save us. So that is the message of this week's podcast, or excuse me, this month's podcast. We'll be back at you soon to keep you up on what is happening. But again, the message you're hearing today is get involved now. We have to be super engaged ahead of 2022. That election cannot be more critical. The House, the Senate, the races in these three key states for governor, secretary of state, and attorney general. There's going to be a lot on the line. And we know how to do this. We can do this. But folks, have to shake off the apathy, have to shake off the complacency. Until next time, stay safe, stay engaged. Signing off.